Chapter 16. Vortex. Doomwheel stood there, staring blankly, shocked and not understanding. "Now!" Cassidea screamed in her thoughts, but the poor young elf was too surprised, stupefied even, to begin to move. Her golden hair swept out behind her as a sudden wind appeared from out of nowhere. She heard a groan behind her and managed to turn just a bit, just enough to see Tiago, struggling to rise and holding his bleeding side. Her eyes widened in horror as she looked past him to the wall, where a swirling vortex had appeared, like a black tornado spinning on its side, black smoke roiling and twisting ominously. "Doomwheel!" Tiago cried desperately, reaching out for her. She grabbed at his hand, but a blast of wind rose up and slammed Tiago away, sending him tumbling, lifting him right off the stone floor, bouncing and rolling. The vortex ate him, swallowing him into darkness. Doomwheel didn't know how to react. She couldn't understand the directional nature of the wind and the purposefulness of it. Was this roiling vortex some living creature? Had it inhaled Tiago? Panicked, she spun, leaning against the wind that continued to buffet her, determined to run away. And then she saw him, terrible and powerful, standing opposite the sidelong tornado, with her and between him and it. She knew this one to be the source of that incredible power, knew then that the tornado was no living thing, but was, rather, a tool for the Archmage of Menzo Baranzon. "Now!" a desperate Cassidea implored her. The sentient sword found its plans unraveling, saw the target of its wrath slipping away. Hardly thinking of the movement, Doomwheel lifted the blade and Gromph lifted his hand. A sharp burst of wind tore the sword from her grasp and sent it bouncing back to disappear into the vortex. "I killed—" Doomwheel started to say, but her words became a shriek as a blast of wind as tangible as a giant's punching fist hurled her backward. Instinctively she braced, or tried to, certain she was about to collide with the stone wall. But she did not. She fell instead, speeding along a tunnel of dark clouds, rolling and tumbling over and over. Jarlaxle sighed. "He must be the center of all creation," he said with great lament. He and Camoriel watching Gromp's victorious walk across the room, to his own enhanced dimensional tunnel. The Archmage paused only briefly to consider the splatter on the far wall, the boots hanging, waggling a bit in the continuing wind from his spell. He too sighed, and no doubt at his brother, Jarlaxle knew. Gromp stretched out his arms, his great robes flapping in his own magical wind, catching him like a kite and sending him into the tunnel. Jarlaxle and Camoriel followed, the mercenary pausing only to scrape some goo onto his hand. Camoriel went in first, Jarlaxle close behind. Jarlaxle was still wiping that sticky goo from his fingers when he passed through the dimensional tunnel to exit into the audience chamber of House Towerden right beside Camoriel, where Archmage Gromph held court. Ravel Zorlaren and his sister Sarabel were there as well, along with Dahlia, who sat on the throne looking very much like a mannequin, or a corpse, perhaps. The image pained Jarlaxle greatly, but alas, what was a rogue to do?
"Archmage," Ravel breathed.
He had been trying to help the injured and confused Tiago up from the floor, but now let his friend fall and backed away deferentially. Terror often resembled deference. Gromph didn't bother to look at him. His eyes stayed locked on Doomwheel, who was splayed on the floor, her fine sword not far from her. She looked back at the Archmage, and she felt, and seemed to all around, so tiny and small. For some reason Jarlaxle couldn't understand. Surely she didn't intend to try to stand against Gromph. Her hand crept out for that lost blade. Gromph lifted his hand and began to circle it in the air in front of him.
"That is a Beenri blade," he warned her, his voice booming with grand magical enhancement, so grand that even the near-comatose Dahlia started in surprise and looked at him.
Gromph thrust his hand forward at Doomwheel, launching his spell past her, and another vortex appeared, a sidelong tornado on the room's far wall. And this one seemed lighter in the eye, bright and sunlit, perhaps, but there was a coldness associated with that light.
"A Bayenri blade," Gromph roared, just as Doomwheel foolishly reached for Cassidea. The sword flew from the floor to Gromph's waiting hand. Doomwheel stared at him, terrified and lost, so lost. But there was no mercy to be found in the amber flame of Gromph Bayenri's eyes.
"You do not belong here, Iblith,"
Archmage Gromph declared. A great howl of wind sounded, shaking the room, focusing on Doomwheel. Her eyes went wide with terror. She clawed at the floor so desperately that she tore her fingers and left more than one fingernail behind when the wind finally caught her and lifted her and flipped her, somersaulting, into the vortex. Jarlaxle winced and whispered, "Poor girl." The vortex spun faster and faster, its diameter shrinking, the storm's eye becoming a dot. And it was gone, as if collapsing in upon itself, leaving only the blank wall there in House de Werden's audience chamber.
"Tend to your husband, foolish priestess," Gromph told Sarabel, "and know that if he dies, you will quickly follow him to the grave."
"The upper levels are lost," Ushtar said with finality. "Even were you to throw every drow, every spell, every slave up above, it would be to no avail. They are mighty, led by capable warriors and with clever generals in support, and they are securing every footstep of ground they gain. My matron mother, they'll not be easily dislodged, nor easily stopped," matron mother Xerath said, staring at the spy. Ushtar merely shrugged, not about to deny the obvious truth. "How long can we fend them off?" matron mother Xerath asked.
"Their journey to the lower city will be difficult," the spy answered. "The drop to the main entry cavern of the lower levels is considerable, and the stairway cannot be raised, of course. The stair is down, folded and secured, and will remain so. I expect that the dwarves will employ magic to get them down to the lower level, but doing so will give us ample opportunity to sting at them with arrows and magic."
"Considerable magic," Zabrak promised from the side. And Matron Mother nodded in appreciation.
"There are other ways to access the lower levels," Matron Mother Xerath reminded him.
Ushtar nodded. "All narrow and easily defended.
See to that defense."
"My Matron Mother," said Ushtar, bowing, and he rushed from the room.
"They will find their way down here," Zabrak said when he and the Matron Mother were alone. "Do not underestimate the resilience and cleverness of dwarves. Matron Mother Evenel did so a century ago, and the price she paid was her very life."
"I understand the danger," Matron Mother Xerath assured him, her voice dead, defeated.
"You have no choice," said Zabrak.
"You ask me to beg Matron Mother Bayenri."
Zabrak didn't bother to answer.
"Facilitate the conversation," Matron Mother Xerath instructed, and Zabrak nodded and moved to a scrying pool.
Soon after, the image of Matron Mother Bayenri appeared in the still waters, and Matron Mother Xerath moved into her view.
Jarlaxle and Kamuriel followed Gromph across the city to his tower abode in Sorcerer. All along the way, Gromph continued to point out the damage the demons had caused, including one scene where several drow bodies lay strewn along a side street, torn apart, limbs asunder, as if clipped by the pincers of a Glabrezu. Bregan d'Aerth might soon expect a command from the Matron Mother to clean up the streets, Gromph told them when they entered his private chambers.
"Of bodies or rampaging demons?" Jarlaxle asked, seeming unamused.
"Both, I would expect," said the Archmage.
"Bregan d'Aerth is not a—" Kimuriel started to protest.
"Bregan d'Aerth is whatever the Matron Mother tells you it is," Gromph interrupted. "Have we not already seen as much?" he added, looking to Jarlaxle. "House guards, perhaps?"
Jarlaxle remained unamused. Gromph got a curious expression on his face then, seeming somewhat surprised. He reached down to his belt, putting a hand on the hilt of the Bayenri sword he had just taken from Doomwheel Armco.
"It calls to me," he explained, drawing the fine-edged blade and holding it up in front of his eyes.
"Are you its new wielder, then?" asked Jarlaxle, who of course was no stranger to Cassidea.
"Hmm,"
Gromph mused. Perhaps I am. His expression turned skeptical and quite amused then.
Or perhaps not, if the sword has any say in the matter.
Cassiodeia is not pleased to be held by a wizard, Jarlaxle surmised. The blade wants to taste blood.
What Cassiodeia wants is irrelevant, Gromph replied.
The archmage started then, as if hit by some unseen force, wincing like someone who had been flicked by a finger under the nose, or some other stinging but harmless disrespect.
It would seem that the sword does not agree, put in Kimoriel.
Jarlaxle looked at Kimoriel and noted that he had his eyes closed. He was intercepting the telepathic protests the sword was launching at Gromph, Jarlaxle realized.
Truly? Gromph said with a snort, and he was clearly talking to the sword then, as he lifted it higher in front of his sparkling eyes.
He studied the pommel, shaped so beautifully into the likeness of a curled and sleeping Pegasus.
No, he said, shaking his head. That will not do.
Gromph pressed the pommel against his forehead, closed his eyes, and scrunched up his face. Jarlaxle looked to Kimoriel, who glanced back and nodded, clearly impressed. Impressed by the psionic assault that Gromph was leveling at Cassiodeia. And Jarlaxle too was impressed, as he watched the pommel of Cassiodeia shift and change, going black, then adding red speckles. Jarlaxle barely contained a laugh as he considered it more closely. Gromph had turned the pommel of mighty Cassiodeia into the likeness of a mushroom. The archmage moved the sword back to arm's length, gave a nod at his handiwork, and said,
Better.
Not very appropriate for a Bayenri blade, Kimoriel remarked, but a proper insult to such a crude instrument as a sword.
And so I doubt that Cassiodeia will try to impose its will upon you again, Jarlaxle remarked.
It is a minor item, said Gromph.
With a look from the sword to the mercenary leader, he casually tossed the sword to Jarlaxle, who caught it easily.
It is a Bayenri blade, Gromph explained. And you are a Bayenri, and a Bayenri warrior at that. Fitting that you carry the sword, if you are strong enough of will to control it.
Jarlaxle returned an amused, if somewhat bored, stare at the open challenge. He could hear the frustration of Cassiodeia in his thoughts, but only if he concentrated on the very distant murmur, and blocking it out entirely was no more a challenge for him than it had been for Gromph. Even without his magical eye patch, which prevented psionic intrusions and commands, Jarlaxle held no fear whatsoever regarding the sword's willpower and ego against his own. He nodded to his brother, offering a look of appreciation, and one that was only half feigned. Jarlaxle loved his magical toys and knew that he had a powerful one in hand with Cassiodeia.
Where is the half-drow girl? Jarlaxle asked, sliding the sword into his belt loop.
A daughter of Tos and Amgo.
Why do you care?
Jarlaxle shrugged. Perhaps I do not. Not excessively, at least. It is my curiosity, nothing more.
I honestly do not know, said Gromph. Freezing to death on a cold mountainside, somewhere. The spine of the world, I expect, and likely somewhere near to the lair of Arothiter.
Why do you wish to know? Do you intend to fetch her? Again Jarlaxle shrugged. She might prove useful at some point.
If I ever lay eyes on that half-Iblith, half-Armgo creature again, I will transform her into a jelly and serve her at the next feast I attend, Gromph said.
And there wasn't the slightest hint in his tone to suggest that he was exaggerating.
Fortunately, I am in the possession of many things you will never see then,
Jarlaxle replied with a tip of his great brimmed hat. He turned to Kimoriel.
To Luskin. He instructed. I have no desire to be discovered by the matron mother here in the city.
But the streets need cleaning, brother, Gromph said.
That is why the gods gave us magic, brother, Jarlaxle replied in the same smug tone. To perform the mundane tasks of life.
Wisely, Kimoriel didn't hesitate, and a moment later he and Jarlaxle stepped into the Bragandyaerth audience hall in Illusk, the undercity of Luskin. She lifted her wet face, trying to regain her wits and strength after the spinning, flying ride through the Archmage's rough portal. She didn't note the cold at first, not until she managed to pull open her eyes to realize that she was face down in deep snow. Dunwheel knew the season, knew that the snows had not yet started to fall anywhere but in the high mountains. She propped herself up on straight arms and slowly swiveled her head about, taking in the grandeur of the scene in front of her. Mountains, huge and tall, with dark rocky spurs prodding forth from the thick blanket of snow, loomed before her. She realized from her posture that her head was higher up the mountain than her feet. To the left and right, the mountains went on beyond her sight. The spine of the world, she realized. Though she didn't recognize any specific peaks from this different perspective, she knew of no other mountain ranges in Faerun of this magnitude and majesty. She lay in the snow, the cold beginning to creep in. The weight of her troubles only then began to creep in with it. Dunwheel looked around. She slapped at the snow desperately, shoving it aside, throwing it far from her. She jabbed her hands down through it, grabbing, grasping, looking for something to catch onto, and only after she began to tire did she take a heartbeat and remember that for which she was searching. Her moment slowed then, and she was relieved to know that she still had all of her fingers, for if she had plunged her hand through the snow to strike against the impossibly sharp blade of Kazidea, then surely she would have left some fingers behind. She pulled herself up to a kneeling position and took a different tack, calling out telepathically for her missing sword, pleading with Kazidea to guide her search. She heard nothing. Panic swept over her. She cried out audibly now, screaming, "Cutter!" repeatedly. She forced herself to her feet and staggered about. "Cutter!" Her cries echoed back to her from the mountainsides, and those echoes brought her desperate, pathetic tone to her ears and mocked her. The vastness of the spine of the world laughed at Little Doe. The sun shined brilliantly upon her, bright in the snow, but the air was cold up here in the vast white sheets. Dunwheel had not often been in the mountains. Where could she go? How could she protect herself from the cold and the wet? And the prowling monsters. Yes, she knew enough of the environment to realize that the cold night might be the least of her problems. "Kazidea!" Doomwheel's thoughts cried out once more, one last time. The sword was lost. She was lost. When you are of the mind to taunt the Archmage, I would prefer you do so after a proper warning to me that I can be far away, Kimoriel scolded his dangerous companion. Jarlaxle drew out Kazidea and turned it over to examine the pommel. "An impressive feat," he asked, as much as stated. "More so than you understand," Kimoriel replied. "The sword tried to dominate him. A sewer rat would have a better chance at ordering about the matron mother." Jarlaxle nodded and stared at the mushroom-shaped and speckled pommel, muttering, "Impressive," and he was talking more about Gromph in general than about this particular feat of willpower. Kazidea was no minor magic item, after all. It was possessed of its own sentience and a great ego. The sword had dominated powerful warriors in the past, even Catti Bree, and even, albeit only for a very short time, and only until he had properly understood the threat, Artemis Entreri. The mercenary considered Gromp's words when he had given Jarlaxle the prize. He was reminding Jarlaxle of his heritage, and openly in front of Kimoriel. Jarlaxle began to nod, sorting it out. Despite the insulting look of the pommel, this sword wasn't a gift for Jarlaxle as much as an offer. Gromph knew that he was walking on dangerous ground back in Menzo Baranzon. It didn't take one of Jarlaxle's perception to recognize the Archmage's outrage over Lolth's loss of the weave, and worse, over her continuing disrespect to the male wizards, even to Gromph, when all believed that she would come to include the web of magic in her domain and should respect its users. Gromph had given Jarlaxle the sword to buy an out for himself, should that necessity come to pass. The former Archmage of Menzo Baranzon, as a member of Bregan de Earth? Jarlaxle's eyes widened at the possibilities. Possibilities that Jarlaxle subsequently dismissed, for in that circumstance, did he really believe that Gromph Banry would serve him and Kimoriel? More likely, he knew, Gromph would demand servitude of them. Gromph Banry did not make offers that one could refuse. Kimuriel walked off to see to some other matters, and Jarlaxle wasted no time. He removed his eye patch to better communicate with the sword, then nodded as the pommel went fully black and became feline in form, a panther. For a moment, Jarlaxle almost abandoned his course and thought to make it look like Guinevere. Perhaps he could use it as a gift back to Drizzt. But no, he decided, and said, "It is a Beanri blade." A pair of tentacles sprouted from the panther's shoulders, transforming the figure from that of a great cat of the world above to an underdark displacer beast, a formidable foe indeed, and a symbol worthy of a blade hanging in the belt loop of Jarlaxle. Those tentacles seemed to come to life for just a moment, magically wrapping around Jarlaxle's hand, securing his grip. In his mind, Jarlaxle could feel Kazidea's appreciation. Yes, they would get along splendidly.